ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। हरे कृष्ण। रीडिंग फ्रॉम द एथ कैंटो चैप्टर नंबर 22 टेक्स्ट नंबर 23। यत्पादयोरषटधीशलीलं प्रदाय दूर्वांकुरेरपि विधाय सतीं सपर्यां अप्युत्तमां गतिमसौ भजति त्रिलोकीं दाश्वान् दाश्वान् अविक्लवमनः कथमार्तिं रच्छेत्। यत्पादयोरषटधीसलिलं प्रदाय दूर्वांकुरेरपि विधाय सतीं सपर्यां अप्युत्तमां गतिमसौ भजति त्रिलोकीं दाश्वान् अविक्लवमनः कथमार्तिं रिच्छेत्। Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada ki. By offering even water, newly grown grass or flower buds at your lotus feet, those who maintain no mental duplicity can achieve the most exalted position within the spiritual world. This Bali Maharaj without duplicity has now offered everything in the three worlds. How then can he deserve to suffer from arrest? Purport. In Bhagavad Gita, it is stated, Patram pushpam phalam toyam yo me bhaktya prayachati tadaham bhakti uparitam ashnami prayatatmanah. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is so kind that if an unsophisticated person with devotion and without duplicity offers at the lotus feet of the Lord a little water, a flower, a fruit or a leaf, the Lord accepts it. Then the devotee is promoted to Vaikuntha, the spiritual world. Brahma drew the Lord's attention to this subject and requested that he release Bali Maharaj, who was suffering, being bound by the ropes of Varun, and who had already given everything, including the three worlds and whatever he possessed. Hare Krishna. Like to beg the blessings of all the senior devotees present here. I'm speaking for my own purification. Please forgive me if I sound very emphatic. But whenever I have some anarthas, I take it up and discuss in Bhagavatam classes. So this verse has been spoken by Brahma to the Lord, and he's confused. He's bewildered. He doesn't know why the Lord is behaving like this. So, and he's saying that you are pleased by a little offering of water, flower, fruit, and you have promised that in the Gita. So why are you punishing Bali Maharaj, who has given everything to you? So we know that in the Gita there is this verse. Everyone knows this verse. In fact, a new devotee coming to ISKCON Bhakti is generally learns this verse as the first verse. Patram pushpam phalam toyam yome bhaktya prachadi. And in fact, this verse has been repeated twice, once in the Gita, once in the Bhagavatam, spoken by Krishna to Sudama, actually, in the 10th canto, when Sudama actually comes with the chipped rice to Krishna, and he wants to offer it, but he's feeling hesitation. He's feeling a little embarrassed because the Lord is, you know, so opulent, living in such a opulent palace and everything. And he's a little concerned that how can I give this stale, you know, smelly with his sweat, chipped rice to Krishna? How can I do that? How can I offer it? So when he was hesitating and the Lord was asking, please give that chipped rice, you have something, and he snatches it from him. And before that, the Lord tells him, reminds him of this verse, Patram pushpam phalam toyam. Know, Sudama, for sure that if anyone offers what these four things with love and devotion, then I accept it. So the Lord is reminding Sudama that you need not worry how insignificant your offering is, but if you are doing it with devotion, if you're offering it with devotion, and I know you have devotion for me, so please you offer it to me and I will accept it. And I will be very happy with it. So we can see that, you know, Lord is not much concerned about the offering. And Brahma is bewildered in this case, actually, that how come that Bali, in fact, in this verse, Patram Pushpam Phalam Toyam, as many of our preachers, they give in lectures, it is in singular, everything is singular, is it not? Patram, one leaf, one flower, one fruit, and little water, if you offer. In singular, if you offer, not even in multitudes, but just in single quantity, one number, the Lord is so pleased. Then what to speak of Bali Maharaj, who has offered the three worlds, which means that all the fruit trees, you know, all the water contained in the universe, and all the flowers coming in all those trees, everything, that means whatever, nothing left actually to be offered. Everything he has offered it to the Lord. And in return, what is the Lord doing? He is binding him up with ropes and abusing him like that, in that sense, is it not? It's a big insult for a king to be bound up like an animal. So Brahma is bewildered. He himself is not able to understand why the Lord is behaving like that. So this is Brahma Vimohan Leela. Where Brahma is bewildered again. So you see, it's not very easy to understand Krishna. Many people, they come new to Krishna, you know, many people, they ask like so many questions, where is God and everything. They're not able to understand what is spiritual life. It's not new, something new, because it's, you know, you can see hundreds and thousands of years old, the same problem, the same contemporary conceptions people have even at that time. So it has not changed so much. Just like, you know, even in Gita, Arjuna is saying that why are you engaging me in this war? You just said, you know, dure nahi avaram karma, sangam tyakta dhananjaya, give up all abominable actions, take up to Krishna consciousness, and then why are you still here on the chariot? Why don't you drive me back to my tent and I can just chant Hare Krishna and be happy? Why are you engaging me in this war? And then Krishna says, that's not what exactly what I meant to say, but you have to fight, you have to fight. So what Arjuna thought was, Krishna consciousness means giving up duties. Which again, today in this world, most of the people misunderstand, is it not? Like one of my aunts, you know, she got married to a Catholic. So her son kind of, flunked in 12th standard because he was very addicted to playing football. So he was so addicted that he neglected his 12th and he flunked in. So when she met me, she was saying, you know, just see, my son is so, you know, nikamma, whatever, you know, like, so he's not studying and everything, he's distracted. You know, I just wish that he becomes something good in life. I really wish, I will be so happy if my son, you know, becomes like a priest in a church or something and becomes like you. I'll be very happy, you know. So she's a little disappointed, and, you know, you can say she wishes well for her son. But the conception that she has about spirituality is this, that it is meant for dropouts. And that's what even Krishna, Arjun thought actually 5,000 years ago, that you're telling me dure nahi avaram karma means that you practice Krishna consciousness, which means stop fighting, give up work and just do bhajan wholly. So it's not a new conception which people have. In fact, it's an age-old conception which even Arjuna had 5,000 years ago. What to speak of Arjuna, even Brahma is having this misunderstanding, you know, about how the Lord functions and what is spiritual life actually. So these confusions are not very unique in that sense to this age. It has been always there, prevalent in our society. So what it needs is, understanding, coming the association devotees and learning. If you see in the Puranas, there are so many such examples where the Lord is so merciful. Like one such case, a story is there of a prostitute who enters into a temple and she spits inside the temple. She's chewing some betel nuts and she spits on the wall. And that wall happens to be having a crevice and it goes inside the crevice. So she gets the benefit of sealing the temple wall, and it is said that she ascends into the, she gets a higher destination because she spat in the temple hall. And the Puranas are filled with such cases where, you know, a person renders small service and they get a reward far more than what they actually deserved. So Brahma is aware of this, that how the Lord behaves, what is his nature, he's very kind to his devotees. And here Bali Maharaj, who in such a non-duplicitous manner is, rendering everything that he had to the Lord, and the Lord is tying him up like a rope. He's abusing him and insulting him like this. The master of the three worlds tying him up like an animal. So why? Why is the Lord behaving like this? What is the reason? Why is Bali Maharaj being punished like this? So in the Puranas, it is explained that Bali Maharaj was actually cursed by Shukracharya, yes, but that is later on. But actually he was cursed by his own grandfather, Prahlad. Prahlad Maharaj, he personally cursed him. Why and when? So it is explained that Bali Maharaj, when his Ashwamedha Yajnas were going on, the last one most probably, at that time, during the completion, I think third month of the Yajna, Aditi, she conceives Vamandev. Vaman appears in the womb of Aditi. So at that time, all the effulgence and the glow and the power of the demons, they seem to be diminished. And Bali Maharaj noticed it and he realizes something inauspicious for us. So immediately he goes to Prahlad, his grandfather, and consults with him that what's wrong, what's going on, why I see some ill effects. So Prahlad, he goes into meditation, a trance, and he realizes that his Supreme Lord, his most worshipable Lord, has incarnated as Vaman. So he mentioned Vishnu has incarnated, he told Bali, and Bali becomes very upset and he says that who is this Vishnu? I mean, why should we be afraid of him? We are very powerful and we have got very powerful soldiers. We can easily defeat him. So when he spoke such arrogantly against Vishnu, who happened to be the worshipable deity of Prahlad, he immediately curses Bali and he says, you will be doomed. I curse you that you will fall from your grace and you will lose all your kingdom. Out of mercy, out of compassion. Even though it was his own grandson, but Prahlad Maharaj curses him. And Bali, he falls from his position subsequently. But of course, he realizes that he was little harsh on his grandson, so then he benedicts him that, don't worry, I bless you, that you will become a great devotee, you will become a great Vaishnava. So that's why we see that when the Lord does things, it is not without a reason. And we all reap the effects of our own karma, actually, in one sense. So Bali Maharaj, his pride had reached such a limit that it needs to be cured. It is a disease, and it is explained that the Lord can tolerate even sense gratification, but he cannot tolerate false ego. And so therefore, in order to conduct this kind of operation, this kind of treatment on his dear devotee Bali Maharaj, he enacted this pastime. He went in the form of a dwarf, as disguised as a dwarf, and then asked this charity from him. So we can see that this pride, the false pride, is one of the greatest obstacles which the Lord just cannot tolerate. And along with opulences comes pride. And we can see here that Bali Maharaj had become proud of his opulences. But he surrendered when the time came, and we can see that he is going through this episode, this very difficult time when he was thoroughly tested in and out by the Lord, and he persevered throughout by being grateful in all these situations. He never complained. He lost everything. So many lessons to be learnt. So many lessons. One lesson we can learn is detachment. He was detached. That means he gave everything, all the wealth that he had, he gave it, handed over to the Lord. Secondly, he was grateful. He never complained in a very devastating situation. He was very humble in such a situation, because for a person to be honored, dishonor is worse than death. So for a king to be tied, like we went to Wada and we saw so many cows being tied. Is it not? I mean, we take great pleasure in going and patting the cows. But if we were in that situation, tied by a neck with a rope, it will not be so, convenient. And it's quite humiliating in that sense. And Bali Maharaj is completely tied up like a prisoner, handcuffed. Many times you see these, you know, in newspapers, when criminals are arrested, and when there are photographers and newspaper reporters, they are like trying to video shoot them, they hide their faces. Is it not? It's such a humiliating thing that they don't want to show. Of course, if they are doing such nonsense, it means that they have no shame. But still, when the reporters are coming to video shoot them, they are like, you know, covering their faces. Why? Because to be arrested is a very, very humiliating situation. Because naturally, such people have been, you know, respected in society. And the next moment, they are like, you know, going to the jail. Everyone is shocked, like, and they want to know. And people are also very eager to know. Okay, Acha is gone like this. And they're also eager to find faults with people. So they want to know what happened. You know, and they're eager. So they hide their faces out of shame. But Bali Maharaj, throughout this humiliation of being arrested, was very humble. And he was seeing it as a mercy of the Lord. He never complained. So he passed this test. He passed this test. So, you know, there's a nice story in this connection about a king. He was visited by a beggar late in the evening sometime, and it was not a very convenient time. So the king, he called the beggar. He says, "What do you want?" So the beggar said, "I wanted some food." So he said, "Ajay, you want some food?" So the king thought, "Let me, you know, have a prank with him. Let me have a joke with him." So he told his servant that winked at him, and he said, "Just get some plate of food for him." So the servant understood. So he brought a plate, imaginary plate. He didn't have anything in his hand. He just brought an imaginary plate, and he pretended to give it to this beggar. So the beggar came to know that he was being joked at. So he also went along with the joke. He also said, thank you very much. And he, you know, took the plate. And the king told him, "See, it's 56 items are there. Please relish everything. Samosas, gulab jamun, dosa, everything is there. Please, after you have, you tell me what is best." And the beggar also went along with the joke. He said, yes, thank you very much for this wonderful feast. You know, after such a long time, you have given me this, you know, I've got this opportunity to eat. Very wonderful. So he sat down and very nicely he was pretending to eat. And the king was looking at him, and so after some time he said, "So which dish you like the best?" So I said, "The gulab jamuns were so delicious. Who made them?" So he said, "Acha, you liked it? Oh, acha. What else you want?" So I said, "You know, I'm not married, so I would like a girl also." He said, "Oh, really wonderful. I will get you some nice from a very good family I can get." So he tells the servant, "Please get all the dancing girls and along with give them." So he again brings all the girls, imaginary. None of them were there, but so the king says, "Please choose one." And the beggar looks at, imagines to look at, "I will take that one." Yes. And the king says, "All right, you can take her, please. All the best." And then he goes with the imaginary girl outside. He says, "Thank you, my dear king. Thank you for this wonderful wife and the wonderful feast." And then he goes. And the king is scratching his head. And he's thinking, what a humble beggar. He's really humble. He really gave me a good time. So he tells the servant, go call the beggar. He calls the beggar and he says, "I'm very pleased with you, your humility. So here, you take some food now, eat something," and he rewards him abundantly. So the principle is that the Lord in a similar way wants to see his devotees humble. And he tested Bali Maharaj in this way, left, right, center, and completely in all respects, took away everything, his wealth, and bound him up and insulted him like this, but he was always persevering. Always perseverant. Because the Lord does not like pride in his devotees. Like we can see in the 9th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, it is said, Chandradev, the moon god, performed tapasya for, I don't know how to tell the, you know, it's such a long number, it is 1 into 10 raised to 13 zeros. That many number of years he performed tapasya. 1 into 10 raised to 13, that means 1 followed by 13 zeros was the number of years Chandra performed tapasya. Certainly, world record for tapasya. Unmatched. Can't beat. But what happened with all the tapasya? It didn't really impress the Lord. Why? Because the next thing Chandra thinks is that he feels he is the top. He is the topmost. He is the best. And the next thing he does is he feels that he is now capable of kidnapping the wife of his spiritual master, Brihaspati. And he kidnaps the wife of his spiritual master, Brihaspati, Tara. And there was another war on this. And we see the Bhagavatam says there are so many wars which have taken place with demons and demigods. But here is a war between demigods and demigods. Chandra on one side and the Indra on the other side. And you know, Shiva taking different sides, and there's a big war. Why? Because Chandra, who was one of the gods and worshipable for many, he became so proud that he thought that he could, you know, even kidnap his spiritual master's wife. So we can see that what pride can do, one can go to such an extent to offend even one's spiritual master. So, even in Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a wonderful pastime about Nimai, about humbling the great logician and grammarian and poet Digvijayi Pandit, Keshav Kashmiri. So it is explained that when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as Nimai, when he was 11 years old, he used to teach Sanskrit grammar to his students. So that time he was visited by this Digvijayi, Keshav Kashmiri, a great scholar, going around defeating all other scholars, proving his superiority. He would even take signatures from all those who he has defeated, saying that he has been defeated by Keshav Kashmiri, like that. So he hears about the great expertise of Nimai, and he comes there and he wants to discuss with Nimai. So Nimai just humbly presents himself, saying that I am just a simple grammar teacher. I am not able to present very well, and my students are also not able to understand what I am teaching, and I am really not an expert. But I heard that you are such a great, glorious poet, expert in grammar. So I'm sure that you can please grace us with your poetry. You know, there's Ganges close by. Why don't you just compose a poetry on the Ganges? And within an hour, Keshav Kashmiri, beautiful, 100-verse poetry composition in 1 hour. And the Lord Nimai, as Nimai, he's glorifying him, saying that wonderful, excellent, what poetry, excellent. Now, can you please, speak about some ornaments, which ornamentations you have used, grammar ornaments which you have used, embellishments you have used, and what are the faults in your poetry? So he said, what are you talking about? I mean, what faults? What do you know about my poetry? You are just a grammar, you're just a neophyte grammar teacher. You don't know about composing poetry. That takes many years of experience. What do you know about faults? So I don't know much about fault, but I've heard from senior authorities and on the subject that there are these kind of faults. And so he said, all right, pick up a fault. Let me see what is your analysis. So he repeats one of the verses which he had spoken. Out of the 100 verses, he repeats one of the verses. And because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had presented himself so humbly, Nimai, as a small 11-year-old boy, certainly a great scholar will not expect such a thing from him. And he had just spoken it without repeating any verse the second time. He was shocked to see that how little Nimai, was able to memorize the verse after having it heard just once. So he asked him, how on earth did you memorize the verse? Said, like, by the grace of the Lord, you have the power to compose, and by the grace of the Lord, I have the gift of memorizing anything which I hear even once. So Digvijayi was thoroughly shaken by that, and he says, oh. And he said, all right, what is your analysis on that? And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, with such elaboration, with such superhuman intelligence, he analyzed the verse with its embellishments and with its faults, that this Digvijay was completely, bewildered. He was completely bewildered. And he asked Chaitanya, how did he do that? And he said, you have been blessed by Goddess Saraswati, and it is by her grace only I am able to do whatever I am doing. And at that time, Digvijay concluded that Goddess Saraswati has been upset with me due to some reason. And it is only because of that that my intelligence has been clouded and I was not able to compose this poem without a fault. And through this small boy, she has humiliated me. Why did she do that? I'm really upset. So he went and he supplicated to Goddess Saraswati, and Goddess appeared to him and told him that this boy, 11-year-old boy, is none other than my master, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Shri Krishna. So immediately go and surrender at his lotus feet. And he comes and he falls at the feet of Nimai, little Nimai, and surrenders. So the time when he was defeated, when he was thoroughly humiliated, his intelligence was clouded and he had nothing to speak. He was speechless. And at such a point of time, all the students of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they started laughing and making fun of him. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told him, no, don't laugh. And one very wonderful words Chaitanya Nimai speaks to console Digvijay. So he says, very nice, he says, "You are the most learned scholar and the topmost of all great poets. For otherwise, how could such fine poetry come from your mouth?" So he consoles him. He says that, "Nevertheless, I have defeated you. I have proven that you are not better than me. You are nowhere close to me. I have thoroughly defeated you. But still, you are the best. There is no other poet better than you. So be consoled that you are still not as bad as it may appear to you right now. So you are not as bad." So consoled him like that. And he's saying, "But even though the poetry you have spoken is pretty good, it's not bad." And he says, "There are faults in your poetry, but don't worry. Even great poets like Bhavabhuti and Jayadev and Kalidas, they are wonderful, celebrated poems, also have faults. So it's not so bad. You're not alone. Everyone has faults. No one can be perfect. No human being can be perfect. So everyone should be humble about their imperfections. As human beings, we are all imperfect. At some point in time, we always make mistakes. And we'll all be humbled. So you're just an ordinary human being." So in a very wonderful intellectual way, consoled him. And he says, "Don't worry. See, such mistakes are to be considered negligible." Okay. It's negligible. It's not so much. Poem overall is good. It's very nice. And he says that, "You are so great, even though I have defeated you, you are such a great poet that I am not even worthy of being your disciple." And he presented himself so humbly that, "I have not defeated you out of false pride." So when Keshav Kashmiri was defeated, he was not devastated. Which means that he had the power. He left him with sufficient power so that he could recollect the mistakes that he had made and then come back. So that's a strategy. It's like, sometimes when people take money for credit, from a bank, there are recovery officials to recover money from those people in case they default. So what the recovery officials, they have a policy. Threaten him and even beat him up to such an extent, but don't do so much harm that he doesn't have the capacity to go work and give back what he has borrowed. Because if he doesn't work, then what? You're only going to lose the money. So hammer him so much that he's scared to death, but at the same time he will take up the responsibility to pay back how much loan he has taken. So they leave you with enough courage and strength to do the job. So similarly, the Lord, he defeated him thoroughly, devastated him, but left him with enough sense so that he could come back and have some intelligence to think of what he has done. So this is the important thing in this section. It is explained that the Lord can tolerate sense gratification, no problem, but he cannot tolerate false ego in his devotee. And this is what it is. Keshav Kashmiri, his false pride was so high. And false pride means what? False pride means this, that it's not how much I have, but how much others don't have. And Keshav Kashmiri was very happy. I mean, he could have been happy by what scholarship he has, but he was miserable just because he met someone who was better than him. Because he knows he's the best. He could have thought that, there are so many people I have defeated. All right, one person defeated me. Why not be satisfied with that? But the nature of false ego is such that even if we find one person better than us, misery. And that is the nature of this world. Superiority is established by how many people are below us. Just like a student comes and tells mother, mother, sorry, I just managed to get very less marks. I just managed to clear in all subjects. And the mother starts, what, you nonsense, you've not been studying this and that, you've been playing throughout the year and all this. And then the son says, but mother, you should hear this. What? Most of the people in the college have failed. Mother says, is it? Okay, then it's all right. Is it not? I mean, that's what is the general psychology, you know. Okay, everyone has failed. Oh, okay, and you just managed to pass. All right, so that's good. And then she may even give a pat on your back. Very good, well done. So it's not how much you have, but how much others don't have, which actually gives us that, you know, satisfaction. And we tend to count, okay, he's better than this, he's better than this, he's better than this, he's better than this. Okay, so these are the things which I have to develop. Write it down and we work on those things, try to beat the person on those, you know, aspects and try to compete and everything. But this is basically the problem. And which the Lord just doesn't like. And Vrindavan means a place. You cannot enter Vrindavan. The Lord just doesn't allow people to enter into Vrindavan, his devotees, if they have a trace of false ego. And Vrindavan means, like we see the pastime of Trinavarta. Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that Trinavarta represents false ego. He became so puffed up, he went right up into the sky, and the Lord then brought him up from the top onto the ground and smashed him and crushed his false pride. Took his life. So Trinavarta represents what? Pride arising due to scholarship. And as a consequence of scholarship, one tends to engage into arguments, logic. And as a consequence of logic, one tends to pull out philosophies where it is explained like Mayavad and Buddhism. They're all like kind of based on logic only, and there's no trace of bhakti, and these are opposed to the principles of devotion. So Trinavarta represents pride because of scholarship. When a person is very learned or he's very scholarly, and naturally what comes along with that is pride. But of course, the Shastra explains more higher than the pride which comes with scholarship is the pride that comes along with money and wealth. That is the greatest. Like one Prabhupada disciple was saying that how when he entered into Vrindavan, he sat on the tanga wala. He took him someplace, and as Brajbasis do, you know, they tell you 20 rupees, and then after they're reaching there, they say, we brought you so far, you didn't tell me this, you have to pay 30 rupees, 30, 40, whatever they want, they'll say. So this Prabhupada disciple became very upset with him, and you know, because he was arguing, and he gave one punch on his face. And when he hit him, he realized he made a mistake. He hit a Rajbasi. So immediately he apologized. But this Rajbasi, he just didn't say anything. He just put down his head and he left. And this Prabhupada disciple, he gave him the money, whatever he asked for. He says, just to, you know, beg for forgiveness. But he didn't take the money. He just put his head down and just walked out from there. And this disciple was saying, from that day when he left Vrindavan, for the next 7 years he could not come to Vrindavan. He could not come to Vrindavan. There was some obstacle, something. And he realized that probably he has made a great blunder. It is because of his offense to this Brajbasi, which probably has, you know, prevented him from coming into Vrindavan. So we can see that how the Lord does not like false ego. And this is his greatest, he hates that in his devotees. So we can see so many devotees, pride crushed in Vrindavan. Indra, Brahma, all of them. When they came to Vrindavan, their pride was crushed. And there are so many such examples. Like today's Jagannath Rath Yatra. There's a wonderful story in this regard of Udayan Acharya. Great scholar. He came to Jagannath Puri and he was studying the Shastras, Skanda Purana. So while studying, he was he came across this verse. Yatra sakhyat jagannatha shankh chakra gadadhara jantunam darshanat muktam yo dadati kripanidhi. That simply by taking darshan of Jagannath, saksha Jagannath darshan, holding shankh chakra gada and padma, once muktim dadati kripanidhi, he gets deliverance, he becomes delivered from the cycle of birth and death by taking darshan once. So he was studying and came across this verse, and his intellect took over, his gyan took over, and he felt, how is that possible? So many people taking darshan, what does that mean, that all are getting mukti? So he thought, no, it's not possible. It's probably an exaggeration. And again, you know, this is not new for many of the devotees, sadhaka devotees, because we come across so many things and we think that it's an exaggeration. So he actually thought that taking darshan of Lord Jagannath even once, one gets deliverance, was an exaggeration. What happened? Next day, when the pujaris were opening the darshan of Lord Jagannath, the door was jammed. It was jammed. It was not opening. And they were thinking, what's wrong? I mean, and they were trying to open, it was not opening. And they called for the sepoys, the soldiers and the guards, and they were trying with their mighty arms, still they could not open. Then they called for the king's soldiers, they came and they couldn't open. And then the pujaris understood that some sinful man has entered into Jagannath Puri to whom Jagannath is not wanting to give darshan. That somehow the Lord revealed to the pujaris in the dream or something, that very sinful man has come. His name is Udayana Acharya. Please go to him and tell him to get out. I don't want him in this place. He's a scholar, but let him go out. So the pujaris, the next day they went calling, Udayana Acharya, Udayana Acharya, Udayana Acharya. And they said, hey, I am Udayana Acharya, what happened? So he says, please get lost. He says, get lost, what do you mean get lost? Yeah, Jagannath doesn't want you here. So why? Because you think like this. And then he was, oh. And then he realizes his big mistake, his pride over his scholarship, and he says, and he supplicates to Lord Jagannath, falls at his feet and begs forgiveness. And then the altar opens. And then the altar opens. It's going to show that how Lord Jagannath is really merciful. And even taking Lord Jagannath darshan once, one can be delivered. That faith. And through this pastime, he's only wonderfully conveyed the message. There's no need to have doubt. In fact, if we doubt, there's a little problem. If we doubt, there's a problem actually. Doubting is a problem. So we should not doubt and just accept that, yes, taken darshan, we are liberated. That is all. So, Hare Krishna. So, there's a nice pastime of Shivanand Sen and Swarup Damodar, but there's no time now. So, thank you. I'll just stop here. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Bhaktavarinda ki jai. Gaur Premanande. Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So there's Rathyatra right now, immediately. All are please welcome. You will all be liberated, Gaurang Prabhu sir.